Hey everyone, this is Chris with the Bonner Breakdown. This is your political disclaimer. The Bonner Breakdown, its partners, sponsors, and affiliates do not condone or endorse any political party or political candidate. As a host, I'm an active listener, so I will often nod my head along to let people know that I'm listening and trying to discover more about who they are. So in that process, my nodding is not necessarily a voice of agreement, but that I'm listening. I hope that you keep that in mind as you watch today's episode. Like, share, follow, subscribe. Make sure that you are sharing out, whether you like it or dislike it. Interact with us online as much as you can. That helps the Bonner Breakdown continue to grow. So with that, we thank you so much for watching and have a great day. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Bonner Breakdown. It's Chris, and this is episode 29. I'm here today with Sage Dixon, who is running for office here for state representative. And we are going to dive into some fun conversation today. Sage is your second time on the show. Welcome.
Yes, it is.
Thanks for coming on today.
I'm happy to be here again, Chris.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. So we start off every show with the good report, and at the end, we will do a air cheers. We'll do an air ting to the glasses, but do you have anything positive, anything that you would consider a good report that you'd want to share?
Well, I have a good report for my family. Something okay. My son's been trying to or gearing up to get his driver's license.
Oh,
so yesterday we went down there and he took the written test and he passed with flying colors. So he's very excited now.
Oh, good for him.
It might be a little melancholy for my wife and I because now he's got one foot out the door in doing that.
But I understand.
Important step in a young person's life. And so that's something good for him. I know he's happy and it brought him some cheer.
That's good. That's really good. You know, and it's fun because there's so many things that are abnormally celebrated right now because of COVID-19.
Right.
You know, we're abnormally celebrating graduations and weddings and all this type of stuff.
Right.
I've got two kids engaged now.
All right.
Which is exciting.
That's exciting.
So I've got a 23 and a 21-year-old, and they're both engaged. And so that's a good report on our end.
Good.
That our kids are making some good decisions.
Well, you'll have to give me
some
pointers on that.
Well,
my daughters aren't in high speed and getting engaged right now.
Okay.
So my 24-year-old.
Yeah. I'll say that I just stand back and let them make their decisions.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, I support you, love you, whatever. Tell me what you need.
Yeah, the 28-year-old did get engaged this year. our oldest. So he's engaged. But a 2-year engagement, which I thought that's crazy. But,
yeah. Well, I one of the things that was cool is my nephew is going to North Dakota in the pilot program.
Oh.
And he's been flying a ton, and he lives in Seattle. Because the air traffic is so low, he has been practicing flying in and out of SeaTac.
Fun.
Like the big strip, you know, like he's, you know, landed 7 times in one day.
That's,
you know,
great.
Just practicing and doing that kind of stuff. So Devin, congratulations on that. He's graduating this year, and so we're trying to figure out how do we do a graduation celebration.
Right.
And I know a lot of people are experiencing that here.
Yes.
Right now. I'm so grateful to be in Idaho.
Yes.
Because the way that we're reopening is not as loose as some, but it's definitely not as tight as most.
Correct.
And I'm grateful that we don't have any new cases here in Bonner County.
Right.
And we've had a huge influx of people from out of town.
Yes.
So I'm kind of surprised.
It's pretty busy out there on the
roads.
It's
kind of wild, I'm just grateful that, that we're able to get some businesses rolling again and get things
Correct.
Going.
Correct. I'm thankful for that as well.
So, let's give a cheers to the good report. Cheers.
Happy to do that. I want to say it's neat that despite the children not being able to get together for a graduation, that as I've been driving around campaigning, I see the signs out in front of the seniors' homes. I think that's a neat idea.
I thought that was great too. Yep. And then they're highlighting seniors in the Daily Bee.
Right.
Every day, which is cool. So,
yeah.
You know, I think it'll be the COVID class of 2020, you know.
Yes.
it's just an interesting and I wonder, you know, how much will permanently be different from all this.
I've
you
been
know
dwelling on that as well.
And feels like there's some pretty big changes.
Correct.
That the nation is going to be grappling with. I think about sports, you know, I'm a sports nut, you know.
Right.
And you know, are we gonna pack an arena?
I think, you know, a lot of that will depend upon if there's another wave,
right,
as they're saying, if there's flare-ups that come in later in the year when things are eased, then that'll definitely, I think, put restrictions on those large public gatherings.
I think some of the pricing on tickets for sports will come down.
They will.
And some of the, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I'm like, it might be,
As a legislature, we're discussing a little bit how we deal with this, and will people be able to attend remotely? Is that constitutionally allowed? We have to be there
for the
to vote. It's required, correct, in doing that. But if there are people who have compromised immune systems or in the demographic that's higher at risk, do we make allowances for that? So we may be coming back to address those.
Absolutely. I think that it is about time that our government caught up with technology.
Right. Correct. It's very difficult for our constituents up here to testify because you technically have to drive all the way down to Boise. I mean, you do, except in rare circumstances. And the representatives from up here, we've been trying since we've been elected to get that technology and the advancement we need so that you could testify remotely.
Wow. You know, that's really startling because it's closer to Seattle or Portland than it is to Boise from here.
Yes.
You know, like, 8 hours or nine.
Right.
You know,
those are not our capitals. We hope they're.
Yeah, they're not. Well, that's good. That's good. So you're on the campaign trail. How's that going?
It's going well. It's an odd year with the COVID situation.
Of course.
And not being able to go out and speak to people. I like to go door to door usually and let people know who I am and see my face. Or at the very least, you have public forums or town halls.
Right.
And not being able to do that is difficult. I'm not what would be termed technology native or whatever you call that, internet native. So I don't even know the right term. So that's been a difficult transition for me. I'm still uncomfortable with a little bit of that. I don't like the way a lot of that is handled. So I tend to stay away from it. Happy to put out information for people, and I use it in that sense. But as far as one-on-one engagement, not my preferred way at all.
Especially are you're referring to social media?
Correct.
Okay. So, and it's been a little hot this year, in the social media realm, as far as a lot of different claims being made and things like that. For you, what's been the kind of the hardest part so far this time around? Because this is one of the first, times that you've had that type of kind of interactivity as far as what's happening online.
Correct. This is the first time I've had a primary opponent. I've been blessed to not, or to have the trust, I think, of most of the people in the district.
Right.
So nobody was willing to run against me. That changed a little bit.
Okay.
Somebody was found to run against me. And so that vitriol is out there. And that's one reason why I didn't engage on social media. It's very easy to sit in front of a screen and type away whatever you want and to put out blatant lies that are very hard to repress, if you will, if somebody wants to believe them. That first bit of information sticks with people. It's an interesting social dynamic in doing that. But on the other side of that, I'm very thankful. I've seen lots of people out there, some of whom I don't even know personally, defending me and who I am and when those lies are coming out. So difficult for my wife, more so than me, because it has to be expected when you're in the political arena.
Yeah.
But this is our first real taste of that negative aspect that's out there.
When you look at kind of that process that you're in and going, okay, well, that's not real or that's inaccurate, what are some of the big ones that you would say, that's not an accurate claim?
Well, recently there's a claim out there that I support young girls being married to old men. And that stems from that stems from a bill that I voted against 2 years ago. That wasn't well written. And another aspect of the reason I voted against it was because I wasn't really up on what the whole issue was. And so rather than vote yes for something because it sounds good, I vote no to make sure I'm not voting for something that contains things I'm not aware of. So there was some parts in that original bill that I did not like. So I voted against that and it failed the whole body. I wasn't like it was 69-1 and
you.
I was the only person voting against that. It didn't pass the House of Representatives. Very similar bill came back this session that was written a little more tightly. It said nobody under 16 is allowed to get married and it has to be no more than a 3-year age difference if you are in that lower minor area and still getting consent of parents. So it was written a little more tightly in doing that. And I voted for that, as did the majority of other people. And so it passed. And so that lie that's going out is, again, a blatant one, just being spun, trying to sully my name, I think, to try and make me look bad to the electorate.
Okay. All right. One of the aspects that is difficult is When you look at every bill that you voted on, obviously it's in the legislature to be debated and to, for people to come out on one side or another to vote yes, no, or absent, right? Isn't that the...
Nope, you cannot vote
absent.
You cannot
vote absent.
If you are present, if you're present in the chambers when we're voting, you have to vote.
Okay, so you either have to vote yes or no. And we all know that no matter what your vote, you're not going to make everybody happy.
Correct. Let me, I want to correct something there. You sure can, if you have a direct conflict of interest, stand up and state that conflict of interest.
Okay.
It's called Rule 45.
Okay.
And you can ask to be excused from voting.
Okay.
And if the body agrees to excuse you, then you can still be in the chambers and not vote. But that's very rare. I believe it mm-hmm. did happen this past year. There was some legislation directly tied to Representative Remington from Coeur d'Alene that he okay. asked to not vote on. He okay. thought there was a direct conflict of interest, and the body allowed that.
Okay, cool. You know, we look at social media, you seems like you've got some defenders out there who are kind of actively, you know, kind of making sure that they're correcting the record. Do you have much interaction with those people that are correcting the record, or is it just them? They're just doing it.
I don't know, Chris. I don't follow it that closely.
Okay. I'm always curious because I know that some people when they, politically, when they're online, they actually have a team of people that are working for them online to do stuff, to whether it's an attack campaign or right. it's a defense campaign. I don't know if you'd put something together like that, or it's just kind of organic and whoever.
There's folks that we communicate with that say, okay. hey, did you know this was happening? Like that. They bring information to me, but I don't direct them as far as what to go do okay. or say. They may ask me what's real here. We know this isn't something you would do.
Right.
What's the real story? Okay. And then they go off on their own. So, but there's nothing that is a direct organized group that's out there supporting me or that we coordinate on.
I was just curious because I know that some campaigns actually hire entire teams
right.
for that type of stuff.
Right.
So one of the things that I saw come up was about your kind of allegiances in the state of Idaho, and that the claim was that you're driven by dark money, private money, that type of, those were the words that they used. And then and that part of that was that, you know, large corporate interests were kind of maneuvering your votes. What's your kind of response to that? Because it's not uncommon to have corporations support legislators.
Right.
It's very common. But what do you say about that?
Sure. It's part of the business that when you're in the legislature, people want to keep in touch with you, as it were. And of course, you could refuse that, but it does, as evidenced by this campaign, it takes money to run a campaign.
Right.
And I've never had large sums of money come in, but I don't solicit money either.
Okay.
Or rarely have I should say that. I did a little bit more this time than I have in the past because I had an opponent, and I haven't done that before, soliciting private donations, I'll say, but I never solicit donations from any sort of corporation. But if there's a business that's doing business within the state and has an interest in keeping somebody there, they want to support that person. And it's kind of like a way to just say, hey, we know you're there, and we'd like to be able to talk to you when it comes, in that sense. So
yeah.
I am not somebody that follows anybody, and I would never vote in a certain direction because of money that I've received. And if they don't like the way I vote, they can keep their money. That's who I am. I'm an honest person, and I explain what my principles are, and I go with my principles in doing that. So,
well, let's talk about those.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about those principles. Like what do you say are some of those backbone principles that you really lean on for making decisions in the legislature?
Limited government is a big one.
Okay.
Freedom of speech. I mean, your basic Bill of Rights are big things to support in doing that. Free markets and not injecting government into the economic cycle.
Okay.
I think there are minimal instances where government can, in a situation like we're having right now, where there's a crisis and people are losing their livelihood for an extended period of time, perhaps there's a role for government to right that, but not in a long-term position. So I feel that I'm a conservative. I'm a classic conservative in the sense that I believe conservatism is about community and a community coming together and preserving what makes that community strong and has in the past and doing that. So supporting family values, traditional families, things like that. Pro-life, defending those things. And I'm not the most vocal person, but I think more work is done by building relationships and gaining respect than standing on a soapbox.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and the soapbox at times is necessary. We all know that, you know, we got to get our message out. So, but that's interesting. Do you find that, when you're in the legislature, that there are things that you find yourself, kind of in a place where you're, having to kind of dig deep into your values, or is most of the time governance kind of slides through, cause I think there's the normal motion of being in a position, and there's just the day-to-day events that come along. And then there's those moments that really challenge kind of our core values. Have you had many of those moments where you feel like, oh, this is challenging my core values at the legislature?
There's one or two, session that'll come up, and there is so much going on that you can't be an expert in all of it. And you tend to become an expert in the committees you're on, mm-hmm. because you hear that legislation over and over, and you're familiar mm-hmm. with what I've always termed the trajectory of the issue, because mm-hmm. these things were going on before you were there, and they'll probably keep going on after you were there.
Right.
You're just here in this moment of time dealing with this. And then so balancing what is going on at that point in time with those principles.
Okay.
Is this something that's a reaction to something that happened right now and it may not be prudent going forward? Mm-hmm. Or is this something that can right something we've been doing wrong, or there's a new occurrence that we have mm-hmm. to address? And we've started to have to address robots driving down streets to deliver packages or pizzas, and something you never would have maybe thought of 10 years ago or 15 years ago. So in the transportation committee, we have to think, how is this going to affect people?
Yeah.
We just Absolutely. Had to amend something we did a few years ago to allow them to weigh more, because now Amazon has come out with a different one that weighs more than the one that we previously had said was okay.
Right.
That UPS might be using. I haven't seen them yet, and it's probably more of an urban thing.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. So, because those things will get shot down so fast in North Idaho. You see a drone flying by, like, click, click.
Well, these are cooler sized things. These are on little four wheels or six wheels. So they're not flying.
They still might get shot.
Right. They might. If it's coming down that long driveway. It's a target.
Yeah.
But there are instances where you have to stop and think and gather more information.
Yeah.
And there's just times when it's a busy session, and I'm a chairman of two committees. Mm-hmm. And so that managing those committees takes up a lot of time. So I'm not able to always concentrate on everything. And that's where having good relationships comes in.
Yeah, that's great. You know, one of the things that you mentioned was, you know, the capacity and ability to kind of stay up to date with all the things going on, whether it's in your committees and all that kind of stuff. Right. How's that work for you, time, energy wise, being so far away from Boise, living here and working down there? What's that like? Because I so many things are based around relationship and connections, and I think a lot of that when it comes to policymaking happens in Boise.
Right.
So how does that work for you?
The heavy work's always done during the session, but people are working on ideas outside of the session. And often we have what are termed interim committees. So in the interim, we will meet to discuss a certain topic. No legislation is necessarily formed, but we do a deeper dive into specific issues. You talked about dark money. I was on a campaign finance reform committee where we discussed what's this going to look like. We came up with some ideas, and now we report every month, where we were reporting only four times a year. Mm-hmm. So people aren't able to hide donations quite as much. So people can go, and there's more transparency in where money is coming from, and to try and decrease the threat of dark money.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of policy work will get done there, but we talk to each other.
Yeah.
If somebody has an idea, or the agencies usually come up and visit, they'll come to the different areas. Oftentimes we have to go to Coeur d'Alene. They don't really know about Sandpoint, or they do, but it's too far for them. But they'll host informational gatherings there so we can hear what the agencies are working on in dealing with rules. It's nice. You can just call the heads of the agencies. Usually, if you have a decent relationship with them, you can call. And if a constituent has a problem, you go right to the person in charge rather than working your way up the chain. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's not a big decrease. But I will say, because we're so far removed,
there
is more activity still down there where the majority of the legislators are. and they'll be talking to each other or issues will come up. And so we play catch up sometimes.
Right. So let's talk about the one of the topics that seems to be a real hot button issue this election cycle is around the work that you did on the ballot initiative, right, and the way that you kind of approach that. Can you walk us through your process kind of from beginning to end with that? Sure. Because assuming we know nothing,
right?
Like what is this all about?
So I saw this was something that happened in the 2018 legislature. And prior to that, coming into that interim, I saw what was a national movement of different groups using a ballot initiative process in a state to get legislation passed, not legislation necessarily, but a law passed that the legislature would not pass. So the elected representatives of the people were not passing a law that they didn't think it was appropriate for the state, but through the ballot initiative process, groups were able to get that on the ballot, depending on how difficult it was or not, and push what their perspective was through a direct democracy process. My strong feeling is the nation and our state and many other states were constructed to be a representative republic, a representative democracy with a constitutional republic behind it, okay, in the lawmaking process. And we have a direct democracy in the sense that that's how we elect our representatives. Correct. And then once we're in the chambers, it's direct democracy, a simple majority. Mm-hmm. But in those chambers, everybody in the state has a representative. If you just get something on the ballot initiative, and the way I describe it is if you have, say, a duplex or a triplex, and there's five people in it, and three people live downstairs and two people are upstairs in two separate things. And the people downstairs say, well, we've decided that you're going to pay our utilities for the whole building here. And we're going to vote on it, though. You'll get a chance to vote on it, but this is going to come before us all. And of course, those three people are going to outvote the two up above who may not want that at all. And that's what this ballot initiative process is. You can go to the majority population areas, get the signatures you need to get something on the ballot.
Okay.
And then even though everybody in the state gets to vote on it, the majority population centers are going to outvote the rest of the state.
Right.
So there's an inequity there. The voice is not being heard. My position is I was protecting the voice of the majority of Idahoans, not silencing that voice.
Okay.
I don't agree with that process, but it's there. Mm-hmm. So my goal, and the goal, it was a group of legislators that felt similarly. I had it on my list. I tend to make lists through the year of legislation that I want to run or things I want to look into. That was on my list. I showed up. There was other legislators with similar lists. We combined a few of those ideas and worked on it and got it through the legislature. The elected representatives of the people thought it was appropriate to tighten this up a little bit. Mm-hmm. They didn't go with my idea. My idea was 35 of 35 districts. That way everybody in the state is having a voice on saying whether this is appropriate for the state or not. That proposal made it up to 24, I think, or 23. We shorten the time frame.
Okay.
And it goes on and on like that.
But there's still a ballot initiative in the state of Idaho.
There is.
It's just structured differently.
Correct. And and I think the referendum process, which is where the people can come and remove a law that the legislature has passed, is a more appropriate process.
Okay.
That is a check against the legislature that the people can have. Because if we go pass a law that the majority of people don't like, that's appropriate for them to come say, we don't like it. But if it's just a majority population saying, we want this policy now, but you elected representatives haven't passed it, then I don't think that's appropriate. But it's there. We just wanted to tighten it up to make it more reflective of the legislative process and the lawmaking process that we have.
Okay. When you look at some of the initiatives that were brought forth, were there any that were red flag initiatives that kind of put that on the radar for you?
So we had the Medicaid expansion in 2018, and that passed. Legally, it passed. I have no quarrel with that. I don't agree with what it was. I'm very happy that not as many people have signed up as even we anticipated, let alone,
I noticed the numbers were down from what they thought.
Yeah. Even though every other state saw an exponential growth above what they anticipated. So I'm happy for that. It's my concern was the state's finances and policy-wise, I don't agree with those policies anyway. But that was not an impetus for that bill, but that just so happened. But then three others came up. There was medical marijuana, trying to get signatures for that. There was another one to raise taxes and give it to the education system. And another one was to raise the minimum wage. So you started with one that was successful, and then immediately you had three more that wouldn't most likely pass in the legislature. So right. therefore trying to drive policy through this ballot initiative process rather than through the elected representatives of the people.
Okay. And so with the language tightened up, what's the big difference between what's there now and what was there before?
I think it would be a more accurate representation of what the people of Idaho want as far as law is concerned. Now, the governor vetoed that bill. So it got through the House and the Senate, governor vetoed it, thought there would be a big lawsuit and that potentially a judge would write his own law into it rather than just ruling that it wasn't constitutional, if you will.
Okay.
One piece of that was to have a financial disclosure. So if you have an idea you want to put on a ballot initiative, then you would say, I think it's going to cost this much and here's where the money should come from. That was something that everybody agreed on for the most part. There's still a little bit of pushback, but we did pass a law this last session to address that. So some improvements are still going, but other than that, the number of districts is the same. The number percentage of signatures of elected voters is the same, and the time frame is the same as it was prior, just because the governor vetoed everything.
Okay, right, right. Yeah. And you know, I think that I would not want to be a governor.
No,
he's in a tough spot,
especially now. Yes, yep. It's very hard to make those decisions when there's a big question mark. And I don't agree with everything Governor Little has done, but I think he's done the best he can with the information he's given, is what I say. And I try and be very generous in knowing that as you move up the chain of leadership, it gets tougher and tougher, and your critics grow more and more abundant in doing that. Mm-hmm. I think we should have looked at different areas of the state rather than having a blanket order for the whole state, because the rural areas are... they're being less impacted by this, save Blaine County, but that's such an outlier that you can't really look at that as a standard for the rest of the state. Give some good guidelines and let people be smart and respect their neighbors and take care of themselves in that sense. But we are where we are, and the plan going forward isn't as fast as I would like it. I think people are growing anxious and they're ready to get back to supporting local businesses and just opening their businesses, and especially sole proprietorships, hair salons, and those folks that are hit really hard.
Hey, you see how fuzzy my head looks right now? I'm like, this thing's just like, it's getting its
own solar
system. I don't
have that problem. Plus, I live with two hairstylists. So.
Oh, well, hey, don't be breaking the codes here.
No,
I'm just playing.
It is a difficult position to be in. I agree. I mean, but it's similar to what I said. You take on that responsibility and you live up to it the best you can.
Yep. So, you know, one of the critiques that I've heard recently was that with you being majority of the people, was it 62% of the people in North Idaho voted for Medicare, the Medicaid expansion?
That was the state, I believe. It was a little over 50%, I think, in our district.
And it was a little over 50. Yeah. Okay, so it was more of a split than it was.
If I'm remembering correctly. I don't dwell on those numbers, but you know, and the funny thing is that's a reflection of only 39% of the people in the state, though. So
they voted,
they did a good job of getting out the vote. Mm-hmm. Very active supporters of that ballot initiative, and they put out information that some people agree with, and they drove people to get out the vote. And that's the way the game is played.
Yeah. So when you look at the healthcare system in the state of Idaho, what are some improvements and things that you would want to see happen here, you know, as far as improving the healthcare process here?
I still think we need more providers up here in doing that. And, it's not something I've dwelt on a lot, Chris. Okay. I was more familiar with those answers to those questions back when we were having the Medicaid expansion discussion. I think a more open market, and there's a lot of government regulation that drives up costs and a lot of the Medicaid expansion benefits the hospitals. So the hospitals were in favor of that. The hospital industry, not necessarily our local nonprofit hospitals, but other ones were in favor of it because it does help them within a measure that people then they have some recourse to the people that are coming into the emergency room. But the studies have shown it doesn't decrease emergency room usage. People just now they have something they can recoup from serving them in that sense, which is important in some sense as far as the finances go.
Yeah.
We still don't allow that cross state traffic. One thing we did do, I will say, is we started what are called enhanced short-term plans here in Idaho. So you were able to get a short-term healthcare plan that was much less cost. It still had to be in compliance with the American Care Act.
The Affordable Care Act.
Affordable Care Act. Yeah. Thank you. And it was only for 11 months, roughly. But what we did, we passed a bill. I carried that, that allows it to go up to 36 months. There was a federal, I think President Trump did an executive order that allowed that to happen. So it allowed us, and we applied and they approved it, but now we can have it up to 3 years and it doesn't have to be explicitly compliant with the ACA. You can kind of get what is necessary for your health in that sense. And it's still robust. A lot of the complaint against it was they would be really pared down and people wouldn't get the care they needed.
Right.
But it doesn't contain things that you may not need as a male, say, or a female for that matter, or whatever. You can make it more specific to your individual situation, help you get through a tough time between jobs or what it may be. And working in the insurance industry, I've seen that help people.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's good. So you're not anti-healthcare?
No, not in any way. Healthcare is very important. I have a son who's a doctor. So.
Yeah, I just keep hearing that. So I was wanting to ask, do you find that campaigning this time around that you're more on your guard than usual?
No, I'm an honest person. I'm gonna tell you exactly what you. Yeah. I mean, the answer that I have for the question you asked.
Yeah,
I am not somebody that hides things or is deceitful in any way.
Yeah,
I know what I believe, and I believe it strongly, and I'm happy to discuss things with people.
Yeah,
I think there was an article that actually came out about me while I was in session, saying that people know that I'm open to talk to anybody. I don't change with the wind, and but I'll listen to you and I'll explain my position.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said it before, the city of Sandpoint and I don't agree on a number of things in the mayor and I, but we find common ground on some things that I know are important to our district. And so we discuss those and move forward. And I try and represent everybody, but that doesn't mean I'm always going to agree with what everybody does. And I'll explain why not. But I appreciate getting information. I know I don't have all the answers. So the more information I can have, the better decision I can make.
That's great. You know, this has been, this recent 6 months has been a wild ride with COVID. And then I think politically, it has been a wild ride. When you look at all the things that are happening nationally, a little bit of chaos, and even the things that have happened in our state has been very contentious and difficult for a lot of people. And do you have any... any thoughts around tone or things that you think might help us as far as the state goes for, you know, kind of shifting some of the rhetoric and tone as we move forward? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'd love for it to change.
Yeah.
I would love for it to be more civil, but I also know that that is the nature of politics and it has been since man started creating
power battles.
Right. When we started gathering into our separate groups and doing that. And I often remind myself that John Adams and Thomas Jefferson had far more visceral battles back in the late 1700s, early 1800s, when they were both vying for the presidency, and lies that get spread and false news reports and all kinds of things like that. So
fake news is not new.
No, it's not. And as much as I have a distaste for that I prefer honest and open communication and civil discourse and debate, it's important. I know that won't go away because it's a political lever and emotional responses aren't good responses. And I try and encourage people to not act emotionally and to look beyond that initial piece of information they get. As we were saying earlier, sometimes that first piece of information settles so deeply with people, they're not going to listen to anything else. And that may be misinformation. And it doesn't matter what you say or evidence that you provide, they're going to hang on to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're part of the problem. That's why you're saying that. Not that, oh, this may be true. I should investigate this more.
Right.
So,
yeah. Maybe some curiosity would be good. You know, I think that would be a helpful thing to good, healthy dose of curiosity.
We've,
to see what's
we've turned into
happening.
People that generally like to digest something quickly or want that information quick and to move on to something else. And when it resonates with us, it's going to stay there. And the way that the algorithms are manufactured to serve you exactly what you want, then you don't get a lot of different information. It takes an effort. And critical thinking. And that is something, I mean, I enjoy the philosophical discussion side of things. So I'm attracted to that. I know not everybody is in doing that, but it would certainly help if we could encourage people to think a little more deeply or to try at least look at the opposing side and see, get some different information. Don't just stick with the first thing.
So as you look at this campaign, you're running again. This time you have some opposition. Why are you running again? What's kind of your motivation?
I enjoy serving the people of this district, and I think I've done a good job and lived up to what I promised to do originally. There's still a lot of representation, well, a lot of issues that aren't necessarily thought of down in Boise, right, or our perspective on it, especially from us being the northernmost district in doing that. Mm-hmm. But from transportation to natural resources and education, different things that we have to deal with being in rural areas and next to borders and all the challenges that go with that. I've made good relationships down there, so I'm able to move things along a bit more, and my counsel is sought in doing that, and I just appreciate that responsibility and the honor that goes along with it. It's mm-hmm. not something, it sounds repetitive, it's hard, I keep saying these things, but it's true. It's an honor and a responsibility that I take seriously, to have the trust of the majority of your people in your district. And I enjoy the intellectual challenge and the philosophical aspect of things, mm-hmm. and trying to sort through problems for a good long-term solution for everybody. First responsibility is to our district, but then mm-hmm. you need to look at things on the state level as well, entirely, because decisions we make affect everybody within the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Well, I think that thoughtful discourse has been lacking for a long time, you know, and at least, you know, back in the day with Adams and Jefferson, they would publicly hash it out,
right,
and have at it, which is kind of fun, you know, in the sense of it's not fun to be that guy. Like, I'm not saying it would be fun to watch you, but it's always good to see that when you have the conversations, hopefully truth prevails.
I'm confident it does. I think if you're not hiding something, people tend to empathize with that. They can feel that when you're open about something.
Yeah. You know, it's this whole, I'll just say this whole media side mixed in with the politics and with my background in faith, it makes it a very awkward and difficult position for me often. And I've had to learn to silence voices that are not, that I don't give influence to.
Right.
And that's not, my heart's for people.
Yes.
So it makes it really hard for me to do that, but it's a good thing, you know, to be able to maintain focus and do that kind of stuff. So, you know, the politics and all of this stuff is it's almost a new religion. And mm-hmm. not a new religion, but it takes this place of fervor, you know, for people. And it makes sense. You know, our laws have a huge impact.
They do. And I think most people are still looking for a savior. And if they're going to place that on man or a system, then it's a false one in that sense. And that tends to end up with a bad result and draws your attention away from the real savior in doing that.
Sure.
And so it has become a religion of sorts. And as media and internet availability is focused attention in specific areas, it just grows. And I think that is another reason why we're becoming more polarized.
Sure.
And there's efforts out there to bring people together, and there's mm-hmm. national centers for civil discourse, but there's always
a
small bias in there, at least that I can see a little bit.
And you know, it's funny because you can, no matter how down the middle on an issue you might be, to someone you're on the left, to someone else you're on the right. And you know, you just, there's nowhere to sit without someone on your left or right today. And even if you're, I think we talked about this last time. If you feel like you're conservative, actually, there's people over here further on the right.
Yes.
You know, if you feel like you're a fair-minded libertarian or maybe a classical liberal, there's people further on the left, you know, so who are, you know, are passionate about that. So, you know, I think I'm hoping that we can have better discourse. I would love to, you know, down the road, we'll see what happens with the show. But, you know, I may be, you know, doing some moderating some live Facebook panels next year. You know, we're looking at some different things that might be fun.
That'd be great.
To have some one-on-one discourse and let people sit in on it.
Yes.
You know, would you be interested in something
Absolutely.
Like that? Okay, cool.
Yeah. Cool. I think humility is a big part of this also, and understanding that we can't hold all knowledge. I mean, there's things that we do know maybe more deeply than others, certain topics that you've studied or whatnot, but being willing to get new information and talking to somebody and not demonizing somebody just because they don't agree with you.
Right.
That goes a long way.
It does. Good. Well, any other thoughts for us today, Sager, on the campaign trail?
Well, we started off with, it just popped into my mind as far as the good, is I'm very thankful we did the National Day of Prayer online.
That was pretty cool.
We still were able to do that. I was disappointed we weren't able to gather, but that worked out really well. I was thankful.
Well, and I serve on that committee. And so it was interesting because we had a, a lot of people were saying, we need to gather. And we're like, well, we also need to provide opportunity for people who don't feel comfortable doing that.
Right.
You know, because it's not that we aren't interested in, we'd love to gather, but we also want to make sure that everybody was able to participate fully. So, I thought it went off pretty well.
It did.
So
that was good. Thank you, Chris. It's nice to be here again, and I appreciate the conversation we have.
Yeah, you bet. And you know, like I have a little political disclaimer at the beginning of all the political shows that people need to listen and then make up their own mind.
Yes.
You know, and do their own research, take a look at it, see what's real, see what's not. You know, it's not my job to try and judge everything that you say to be true or not. but I want to create a platform for you to share, you know, what your perspective is. Right. And I also like to know how people think.
Yes.
You know, because I think that's one of the big pieces missing in politics is we're focused on what they stand for, but not how they think.
Right.
And, you know, people do change their minds if they think.
Correct.
You know, people do grow and they choose something different 4 years later because they know more.
Right.
Right. And to think everybody's a monolith and because they did this one day, they must always think that, you know, like, I don't know anybody who's like that. So, you know, I think it's good for people to understand how you think and kind of, that's why I asked about the values and stuff like that, because even those change over time. You know, I think Donald Trump in his campaign expressed he was pro-abortion and then had an experience and became pro-life, you know, changed his perspective on it, you know, whether you agree with that or whatever, but people do change their perspectives on things. And I think we got to allow people the opportunity to consider, how do you think, you know? So thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I am looking forward. I do have Gary scheduled to come on. And so I'll have a good conversation with him. And, you know, it is mail-in ballot year. this is the COVID election. Well,
thank you for reminding people. Yes.
So, and I'm doing it on our social media, posting the links for people. May 19th at midnight is the deadline.
That's right.
To
apply.
To apply.
Correct.
For your mail-in ballot.
You have until June 2nd to turn it in.
To turn it in
by 5 o'clock on June 2nd.
And if you have mail forwarding, if you have anything like that, get it in now. Don't wait, because you may just happen to get that mail-in ballot after.
Yeah, they're very behind. So it's been taking weeks to get the ballots out.
It has taken weeks for us.
Yeah. You can turn it in at the county building.
Okay.
By the high school. You can also get your absentee ballot there as well, or the application, because they have to mail it to you, but you can get the application there. Kokanee Coffee has applications.
Okay.
One last thing. If you have questions for me, sage@sagedixon.com.
Okay.
As I said, I don't interact online very much. So if I'm happy to answer any questions people have.
Perfect. Okay. Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Chris.
Appreciate it, and have a good day.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And we will see you again soon. Thank you for watching this episode of the Bonner Breakdown. Special thanks to Ting and BCHA for sponsoring this show. For more shows or to be a guest, please visit BonnerBreakdown.com. Have a great day.